passe un super artiste, super encore un but sensationnel. That's a brilliant bit of follow-up play by Mahé. Oh my goodness me, what a shot!
Sagosen, Sagosen setter det hen! Han setter den! De I semifinale!
Hello everyone and welcome to the Uninformed Handball Hour. Chris O'Reilly here, joined by Alex Kulesh. And we're here to bring you a Women's Champions League quarter-final podcast. Alex, last time we checked in on you, you're in New Orleans. And you're still in New Orleans. How's the body holding up?
Still in New Orleans. The body is starting to give up, but the mind is still here.
Good, good. I've just started a 2-week handball journey in Montpellier for the game tonight. We're recording on Wednesday night. Paris on Thursday, Zagreb on Friday for the Yaron Cup beach handball, both commentating and playing, which will be good fun until Wednesday. Then Thursday to Barcelona for Barcelona PSG, Friday to Vienna for Saturday's women's Champions League quarterfinal between Jura and Vipers, then a Bundesliga game in my hotel room on Sunday, then back home on Monday in just under 2 weeks' time. So, yeah, you really feel the crunch time of the season is upon us when you've got trips like that happening.
Yeah, no, it definitely feels like there's just handball everywhere to an extent where, as we recorded these two podcasts this week, I almost forgot about the European League, which happened in the meantime and threw up one of the greatest games of the season. But will we get into a bit of European League?
Yeah, we can talk. I mean, it was such an amazing game, which I haven't had the time to watch in full. So I've just been like going through bits and pieces of it between Fuchsia Berlin and HBC Nantes, which we expected to be like the highlight game of the quarterfinals. But it seemed like it was a game for the ages, and next week the second leg could be even more of the same.
I feel for Fuchsia Berlin, who were in control for most of the game, as much as 5 goals up with about 15 minutes left, when actually at that moment then Nantes came back, then Matthias Gürsel put the foot to the gas pedal and kept Fuchsia Berlin ahead. But it was Nantes just wouldn't give up. Aymeric Mean, despite his relatively low shooting percentage, really took over the game when he really needed to. Jorge Maqueda did the job. And it was Julian Boss at the end as well that looked like they'd won it for Nantes. They went up 33-31, which is 2 minutes ago. But through a bit of chaos on the other side, it was Fuchsia Berlin who got a draw, and it's completely open, I think. We know Nantes have a pretty spectacular home advantage, or at least home support, but I don't think that will make a difference. And for Fuchsia Berlin, they've just gone through a pretty tough gauntlet in Kiel and Nantes, and funnily enough, two good performances, two draws, and their season might be over.
They might end up with nothing
standard around them.
Yes. Yeah, it's quite crushing, but a great game in the end. 33-33 draw. And you mentioned Aymeric Mean there, 10 goals, a bunch of assists as well. And you know, only 14 men get to go to Paris 2024 for France. And if it was just based on the 14 best men, you'd figure he'd be putting himself in a really good spot to make that squad. But, I guess that's a conversation for another day, whether he'll actually make that squad in the end. But, he's really, in the last couple of weeks, coming to the fore.
Yeah, and it's a real pity because it looked like Mean had just broken into the French squad. And then had that injury that's kept him out all year. Made him miss the last European Championship. Made him miss most of the season, but he has come back really strong for Nantes, which will, make it a pretty tough decision for Guillaume Gilles in the French coaching staff. So, mean a funny player. He's a playmaker, but he's really a scorer. Like the guy is, he has one thing on his mind. He wants to score. You say he had a bunch of assists. He had two assists and 17 shots,
Okay.
and
It
that's the type
felt
of
like more. It felt like
playmaker
more.
meaning.
Maybe the Berlin statsmen were being a bit stingy. That's always the topic with assists. It felt like he had more, but no, he's just throwing the ball in the goal instead of, or around the goal, instead of passing to teammates. But yeah, a draw there, and that's beautifully poised, as is Reinick Leuven against Sporting. Reinick Leuven winning by 3 at home, but Sporting at home next week definitely have a chance. As do Skjern. One goal loss for them at Dinamo Bucharesti, and the only contest which is over, I think it's fair to say, is Sevahof and Flensburg. No real surprise that Flensburg won that, and also with the way the two teams play, no real surprise that there were 71 goals in the game, 41-30 in the end for Flensburg. And it's good to have it's good to know that Flensburg are in there. And we don't really need more German teams, if you ask me.
I agree. Definitely surprised by Reinick Leuven beating Sporting, who were in such amazing form. I wonder if they just kind of got a little bit of a shock. 3 goals isn't the end of the world. And then Flensburg just absolutely bullied the Sevahof kids. They got 14 goals from the line from 15 shots. They just, they got it to the line repeatedly. Jürgensen and Golla just turned and just absolutely dominated the young Swedes. But yeah, again, very surprised by Reinick Leuven's win. They've been okay, and I suppose they've turned things around, but they've lost to Melsungen and Fessler and whatever it is. I was expecting Sporting to continue their hot streak, but they didn't.
3 goals is, I would say, they've given themselves a really decent chance for the second leg. So let's see though. That's all coming next week, and I'm sure we'll speak more about that. But let's turn our attention in the meantime to the Women's Champions League. And in our interview for this one, as we promised earlier in the week, we spoke to Anna Gross, who is playing with Djur, her final season with the club, and looking to finally pick up a Champions League title with them, but they've got the not insignificant task of facing the three-time reigning champions, Vipers, in the quarterfinals over the next couple of weeks. We also spoke about her reaching the Olympics for the first time with Slovenia, which is a huge achievement for them, and the next steps in her career as well, as she's set to go back to Slovenia and play for Krim next season. All right, Anna, it's lovely to talk to you again. As I asked you for this chat, I mentioned that you must be flying high. You said that has already been, you've already been brought down with the hard work of club action on the way. But I want to start with asking you about that fantastic weekend for you and Slovenia in Germany just a couple of weeks ago, and finally getting the Slovenian team to the Olympics in Paris this summer. When it comes to, all the different achievements in your career, where does leading this team finally to an Olympics rank for you?
Yeah, I would say completely on the top, I think, because that was really a big dream that honestly, me and also my team, I mean, all the girls in our team didn't even, like, let's say, we didn't allow us even to dream about, because we thought it's so unachievable for us, because it's so complicated to get there, even to the qualification. You need to do some good results in the European Championship or World Championship, and of course the home European Championship brought us to the qualification, and we knew we can do something big there, and we did. We were eighth, which was the best result for Slovenia. in history. So yeah, but when once we were in the qualification, then we said, okay, now we cannot let this go. I think it's once in a lifetime opportunity. I mean, for us, for my generation, for sure. But I think maybe also for the younger ones. Okay, you never know. But yeah, maybe also for them. So we said, okay, now it's now or never. So yeah, we did it, and I'm so proud and so happy, and really all the dreams come true. And I think that's for sure. It's on the top of my list of all the achievements in my career.
Was it genuinely a fact that you didn't think it was achievable with this team? Like over the years, it just wasn't really on the radar for you?
No, honestly, it wasn't. I mean, like when all my teammates from the clubs were going for the Olympic Games, I was always like, wow, it would be so good to be there. Would I be able to be there? But it was like, I think it will be almost impossible. You know, like, of course, you have this like a little bit of hope that at some point you can. But yeah, just it was so hard to even dream about it. But then, honestly, when Dragan Adjic came as a coach and presented us this as a really realistic thing, like, girls, you can really make it to the Olympic Games. First, you were like, are you joking? Or what? Like, honestly, we were not really believing it, you know? So, but after like more and more, he was repeating it more and more every like gathering, every camp that we had together. And after when we got this eighth place in the European, then we say, okay, maybe really it is possible. So every time a bit more believing it. So, and then after we really see, okay, it is manageable for us. So after you get more realistic, for sure.
I don't know if you have had much of a thought about Dragan also for that final game against Montenegro. You know, that was the do or die match. I think you probably figured that as a team in the build up as well, that whatever happens with Germany in the first day, that the final game against Montenegro was going to be the decider. But also for Dragan, I mean, he's made his name with Montenegro and the Olympics. So it's a massive thing for him to have orchestrated that with your team. How was he in and around that game? Was it a little bit different for him?
I honestly was not like so focusing on him, but as I could see after, and also what I was, let's say, reading about it in his interviews later on, I think he was quite calm. He was quite calm, and I mean, also in the game, he was for sure. He tried to be as calm as possible. We didn't feel at all like he would be nervous or something inside of him. I don't know what was actually happening, but on the bench, he was really calm and positive throughout all the tournament. And he knew that would be important for us, because when you play in such an important game, like, yeah, for us, that was the most important game in our careers. Yeah. So then you just need someone to be calm on the bench, not doing any pressure or anything. And he really was. So he was really a big support for us. And I was just so proud and happy of our team, how we all managed to get over this pressure somehow, even though we didn't have a pressure of outside. Most people didn't even believe we will make it, but pressure on ourselves, because we knew how great of opportunity we have and we don't want to let this go. So we really managed it together really, really well. And we played a great match, and Dragan was also leading it good. So for sure, it was not easy for him to play against Montenegro. He said he would like that both of the teams go, of course, but that time was not possible. So yeah, he was really happy. And I think it was a big achievement for him as well.
You and the Slovenian team have developed really nicely over the last few years. You've developed a really strong core with the team. I think that European Championship at home really showed it. And the development, even in a few years, seems quite remarkable. You know, thinking of this Slovenia team as a team that could always beat a big opponent at some point early in a championship. But the thought was that the consistency was lacking. And even, you know, I think back to like 2018, when you were in France and sometimes even playing without a left-hander on the right wing. So it felt like it wasn't a formed squad, just, you know, some talented players, and it never really came together. What was that like from your perspective? Because you've been, I guess, competing at a different level at club to the country, and with different expectations as well.
Yes, it's true. Since I am in the national team, we went through, I mean, like so many ups and downs. And the generation change also at some point. I don't know which year it was, when like the main, the base of the team changed completely. And after, honestly, we barely had, to build up a team. And like you said, we didn't even have a left hander on the right wing for, I don't know, like two competitions or even more, because Varagić, she was injured and she was also pregnant. So yeah, it was like changing a lot. And at some point was me, Stanko, Zulić on the backs, a bit more experience somehow, even though them two were still very young. And behind we had even younger. So it was crazy. Yeah. But I remember 2017, in the World Championship, when we managed to win France the first game, we were not so far for beating Romania as well. So that group, and we had a really good championship at that time for the team that we had. And then I feel that every championship we progressed, and of course there were like championship in Denmark, European, when it was really bad, but also we had a tough group as well. So yeah, anyway, but I still feel that, and no matter the team and no matter the players, that we always somehow gave our all, and we had some great games. Consistency was lacking, like you said, but I think it was all leading to now, when I mean, like I said, also to the European Championship at home, when we had a great championship, also lacking a little bit of luck maybe at the end. But in general, I think we could be really happy with what we did, and that all of this led us to Olympic Games. So it was all worth it, no matter the losses. But yeah, it was. I think it was a great road to where we are today.
I know France is a very special place for you. You had a great period of your career there, and having the games in Paris and hopefully then Lille in the second week, I guess is an added bonus to that. Is there something in particular you're looking forward to about the Olympic experience?
So yeah, I'm really happy actually that it's in France. Of course, it's a special place for me. Like, and I know how much people love handball in France, so I'm sure that the hall will be full, and that will be for sure very nice. Of course, I'm looking forward to the Olympic Village. I think that's something that everyone is looking forward to when you're going first time to the Olympics, that you just want to experience that and see all these athletes at one place. I'm happy also at least that we are in the first part already in Paris, that they didn't, because first was saying that it will be Lille from the beginning. So I was a little bit sad about that, but thankfully we are in Paris from the beginning, and I hope after we can achieve Lille as well. But all in all, like Olympic, and of course the opening ceremony, that also it's something that we are all
looking forward to. on the boats on the Seine, that sounds amazing. Are there any sports or athletes that you want to run into in the village and take a photo with?
Not really. I think is of course there are some athletes that you admire, of course also basketball players, but I don't think, I mean, they are starting in Lille, so I think we will not meet, unfortunately, or I don't know, like Djokovic or some tennis players, but that I admire. But in general, I think it's just would be nice to see, like, I hope more, like a lot of them in the Olympic Village.
Maybe you can wave at Luka Doncic as your trains pass from Lille to Paris.
Yeah, maybe.
The other way. Talking a bit about what's coming up this week then, and club action, you mentioned before, it's a lot of getting used to with the new coaches at Jura, with Per Johannesson coming in. And for you as well, you've had your injury issues, which is something that we don't see too often with you. So I guess it's been a bit of a strange season altogether with you and Jared.
Yes, it's exactly what you said. It was a bit strange. Unfortunately, I got injured quite early on in the beginning of the season. This hamstring injury was quite long for me. I was at least able to participate in the World Championship later, even though I missed also first two games. So yeah, and then when I came back finally for the second part, then in the second game I got my nose broken. So again, I was out for a month and a half. So I basically missed almost all of the group matches, let's say. I played maybe four or five altogether. So that was a weird situation for me. Really, I never missed so many games in a season. So it was hard, honestly. It was first time I had to deal with this kind of situation. So yeah, but it is what it is. It's part of the sport. So I tried to take it as that. And also after, of course, we changed the coach. So it was a lot of things happening this season for us as well as a team. But now we are where we want to be, even though the domestic trophies are one already lost in the second. Yeah, we will see. You never know, but probably hard to achieve it, the title. So, but the Champions League is still in our hands. So yeah, we are focusing a lot on that now. Thankfully, I'm healthy now. I hope it stays like this till the end of the season, knocking on the wood. So, yeah, we are working now with a new coach. He brought some new ideas, both of them, actually. I know Bregar, of course, from before. So I'm happy he joined, and he is very smart, handball smart, and he knows a lot of handball players and everything. He's been following Gjør and for many years, so he knows everything about us. So yeah, I think they brought some new energy, and I like to work with them. I think the trainings are really intense, so that is what we need. So yeah, we have a great challenges in front of us, and hope we can make it.
Can you give a bit of insight into, I guess, the day-to-day stuff now? Because as you said, the change in coaches came after the cup final. The league feels a little bit out of reach now, and it's been such a big break between the end of the group phase in the Champions League and now the quarterfinal, because you skipped those playoffs. How is it in terms of trying to raise the team and peak at the right time of the season, even though you do have games constantly in Hungary, which of course you have to keep going to, you have to keep winning the games, and that's not a guarantee. But I guess on some level, you're trying to build up for this quarterfinal against Vipers.
Yeah, we are, since Per arrived, because first was Per and after was Uroš, he just came now after the national team break. So the first week with him, it was really like, of course, focus on the defense. And we immediately started to work on defense and, very intense trainings and very, he's really putting a lot of importance to that. So, a lot of aggressivity, much more aggressive defense, let's say. Mostly he's involving like everyone in the trainings and in the games as well, which was a little bit different before. So I think, it's... overall, I mean, also Uroš, he brought some new tactical ideas also in the attack. So we are working on that now. Mostly we were already before the national team break focusing on Vipers, even though we still had some, let's say, easier games in the league. But we know that these two games are actually now everything for us in this season. So we've been working on that now for last weeks that we've been together. And
you must be sick of Vipers at this point. The concept of them, even though the players change every year, it seems.
I mean, like, of course, you know, it's I'm not, that's a hard word, sick, but it is a team that I meet, I and we meet, sorry, regularly. And since I lost against them in the finals with Brest, I have some revenge to in myself, not really, but you know, it's like you want to beat them, and of course they are the team to beat now because they've won the Champions League in the last 3 years. So we all know what a great team they are and how hard it is to play against them. At some point we would meet them for sure. So maybe it's even better now because we have two games than one game. So and also you play at the home court the second one. So I think that's a advantage for us. Even though nowadays in handball you never know, but still I think in two games it's everything is possible. Then in one game when it's mostly also like depends so much of the one daily form of everyone. So yeah, we want to beat them. The girls are also the Gjør girls also have from before I arrived as well some bills to pay to them, or how you say it. So, yeah.
That's good. Interesting you mentioned about having the second leg at home. Maybe it varies from team to team. In the handball world, some care about it a little more. Some teams and players less. I guess that says a lot about the kind of atmosphere that you have at the club as well, and the, you know, what you will have when you bring Vipers to Jura for the second leg, that you know that as long as you give yourselves a chance, that you'll be able to make things happen. Do you feel like it depends on how the situation is in the arena with the, you know, with the club's aura or with the fans?
Yeah, for sure. For us, it means a big deal, really. Like, the fans are really pushing us, and at home, I feel that we are always like stable, and I don't know how we have this different vibe or how to say, even though of course we also lost some games at home and in the last years, but anyway, I still feel that like it's better when you have the second one at home, because yeah, the fans, they mean a lot. They really mean a lot. I think the arena will be full for sure, but of course under condition that we play a really good game in Vipers as well. So we have to, there it's also not easy to play. Mm. So we have to really do a great job there first, so that we can of course also then be at home and have a great game as well at home for our fans.
And finally then, just a little look ahead to the future. In October, it was announced that you'd be heading back to Krim for next season. And you had a little spell there a couple of years ago, but in a way, it kind of seems like a full circle in your career going back there now. Is that how you're looking at it after so long? I guess, you know, you've been experiencing so much. And I know you've said before that looking at different clubs that you joined, it's been a case of trying to make the most of your playing career and to experience these things while you can. Is also going home, so to speak, to Slovenia and to Krim part of that reasoning as well?
For sure it is. It is exactly how you described it. And it is somehow the circle coming together. I always said that I would really like to finish my career at home, even though I'm not saying I will finish after 2 years that I signed the contract. You never know what happens later, of course. But somehow are my last years of my career, and I still wanted to play at home. I think it's not, there is no nicer thing than that a player can play at home in front of your family, friends, the fans, where it all also started, let's say, my professional career. So that's why I also decided to go home. I feel I want to enjoy these last years of my career there, and it all came back together. Thankfully, I'm happy that we agreed with Krim, and also Krim now it's having really great ambitions, which was of course very important for me. Not just that I'm going home, but also that we still are going to play for great goals. I think we will have a great team next year, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I was going to ask how important that is for you, because Krim in the last couple of years have really come back to the fore as a ambitious club, and you see that around everything they're doing. But it wasn't the case even a few years before that. It looked like they were a little bit down. That was an important part of the discussions then with them, that they matched your ambitions.
Yeah, for sure it was. I said I still feel I can play on the highest level. I still want to fight for the Champions League title. Hopefully this year I will get it, but of course if it's possible, even more. So that was important part of it, that they had, that we have a good team that will fight for the final four. And I think also all the signings that they did are showing that they have great ambitions for that. So that was important part for me as well.
That's all to look forward to after the summer, and so much to come before then. And hopefully you, I was going to say enjoy the battle for the final four in the coming 2 weeks. I'm not too sure how much of it will be enjoyable, but at least for us who get to watch from afar, it will. So thanks so much for your time, Anna.
Thank you so much.
Thank you to Anna Gross, and as we spoke about with her, a quarterfinal between Jura and Vipers coming up this weekend. I think it's as good a place as any to start looking at these quarterfinals. The last six Champions League titles have been won by these two teams. The last three by Vipers, the three before that by Jura. And Jura with nothing else to fight for at the moment. They lost the cup. They're basically out of the running for the league, as Anna kind of alluded to there. but they probably would be slightly favourites for this quarterfinal against Vipers. Now, Alex, you always say that the team with the best Norwegians has the best chance of winning. This is a game with a lot of Norwegians. Who's got the best ones?
Funny enough, there's not that many top Norwegians and Vipers left anymore. But they are around the place. And I think it's a really tough one to call. It's how you read that last round for Vipers. We spoke to Anna Jaffirva for Vipers. She said that they needed a little bit of ramp up in that playoff round to get better and really challenge Gjør in the quarterfinal. And they really struggled. I think if there was a more confident second leg performance, I would have gone in to this quarterfinal thinking, okay, they're starting to figure out, they're starting to do it. But they seem to be fully reliant on Anna Bjerkevi and Lois Abing, while Gjør are just a much broader team. And I think finally, this is the time where Vipers fall.
I think you made a good point there. That second leg at home was not one that would fill you full of confidence in the team. They managed to turn things around pretty well in that second half against DVSC Scheffler to qualify, but they needed that last second goal from Abing to snatch the draw and go through by one on aggregate in the end. You know, they have players around the court who can do damage there. Yumina Roberts didn't manage to have a good game in that one, but a real weapon for this team. But then you're hoping for some kind of miracle as well from Katrina Lunde over the two legs here. That seems to be a solution for Vipers over the years. They're not favourites by any means anymore at this stage. I think they admit that themselves. And Adrian Costeu wrote an interesting power ranking for the eight remaining teams in the competition for Euro Handball and put Vipers in sixth position there and Gjør in first position. So he has a clear favourite in that regard. And Anna Gross mentioning that the second leg at home is super important for this team. She admits that it's not the case for a lot of teams or in handball, but Gjør are one of those clubs that really can leverage home advantage in a second leg. And I think that probably will be the case as well. Also from a neutral point of view, we probably want to have at least one Hungarian team in there in the 20,000-seat arena.
It would help things for sure. But are we going to have two? That's the question. When the playoff round started, it looked like FTC were out. We were already talking about their downfall this year. And then they just had a tremendous performance to win by 5 goals against Brest-Bretagne away from home. And now they play Eschberg in the quarterfinal. Does this team have enough heart to knock down this kind of Team Eschberg juggernaut?
Yeah, they keep doing it. They kind of confound the expectations of everyone of the form book. And, you know, they did it last season, even getting to the Final Four in that second leg away in Metz. They did it in the playoff away to Brest. And, yeah, you wouldn't put it past them completely. Like, the players they have at their disposal, like Andrea Lekic, Kloiber, Bulk, Malestein, Svijic, they just have a lot, Edvige as well, they just have a lot of brain power in there, you know. It's not just about the ability, but the knowing how to work their way through these rounds. And they remind me a little bit of the Vipers team from a few seasons ago that had Bello Gilden kind of pulling the strings. You know, they weren't necessarily the best team in the competition, but they were able to work their way through and figure things out. The thing is, they've come up against Esbjerg twice this season already, and this could be a positive for them. They lost both games in the group phase against Esbjerg by 5 and 4 goals. And generally, you'd say that recent history in the Champions League has shown us that when teams do that, that the team that has lost the previous games are in a better position than they were before, because they've You know, they've had time to figure it out. It's not so much of a, you know, you're not gonna mentally bully the likes of Andrea Lekic and Dragana Svijic by beating them a bunch of times. You're more just allowing them away back into it. That's the way Barca worked against Chelsea a couple of seasons ago. I don't know if we can compare this FTC team to Barca's men from a few seasons ago. Nevertheless, I think Esbjergar still favourites. Oh, for all that, Henny Raista, Norrmalm, and the final season of Jesper Jensen with the team before he leaves to be with the Danish team fully. Yeah, I think they're going back to Budapest. They need to win a title.
Yeah, I was about to say, if you're going to compare any team to Barcelona, you know, it's got to be this Team Estrich team.
Yeah.
You know, they have absolutely dominated the Danish league this season. Just a couple of losses in the Champions League this year, but you know, those don't really worry me too much. Do you think the wheels off Esbjerg can come off relatively quick based on their kind of last couple of seasons in the Champions League and the fact that it is the last season of this iteration of this team? Do you think, you know, if they have a challenge, if FTC really come back and, you know, get a good win, they might fall apart?
That is the fear, right, with the team, that has happened before. Maybe they've learned the lessons from that. You'd imagine they would. And they are a team that generally are quite good at dealing with tough situations like that. You know, surely they've learned their lessons from it. But FTC are such a sneaky, tricky, brilliant team in their own, like, individual-wise, that you can never count them out. I'm definitely putting Esbjerg as favourites in this regard. And on that power ranking, there, Esbjerg are second, FTC are seventh. So I have to agree with that.
Fair enough. Out of the other two, what game really strikes your fancy?
Oh, they're probably the two closest games.
they're the two closest.
It has to be Chesima Bucharesti against Metz. This feels like a classic handball match nowadays. And for Chesima Bucharesti, it's like, you know, it's got to happen sometime soon. I mean, it's bad enough for Esbjerg. They keep losing out in the final four, but Bucharest now four straight quarterfinal defeats. And usually that's come against Esbjerg, but a real chance for them against a Metz team that themselves, you know, feel like it's their time. It's everyone's time. And that's because, as I mentioned at the top, the last six titles have been won by two teams. So it's like they've dominated so much that, you know, they've been knocking on the door for so long, Chesima and Metz. I give the slight edge to Metz in this one, but this is, for me, as close to 50-50 as you can get. I think Bietigheim and Odense will be fairly close. Then looking back at how the results went between them earlier in the season, you know, Odense winning by 13 goals at home against Bietigheim. That's not the kind of result you can turn around completely so easily. So I think they are favourites in that one over two legs, but Bucharest and Metz is on a knife edge for me.
I like the look of Metz overall. And I think, unfortunately, we're going to have a situation where this Chesime team is just not going to be good enough. And then Odense on the other side. I can't believe Bietigheim are still around. it shocks me so much.
Still plugging away there. But it could be the end of the road for them. Which, in that case, could have two Danish teams in the women's final four, which would be something. But if the Women's Champions League and knockout matches among these teams have taught us anything in the last few years, is that predictions, even after the first leg, can be completely a waste of time. So let's see how it goes, folks. And we'll be back with you to report on what was probably clear all along. But until then, enjoy the games for the rest of this week. So much good handball on the way. We've got a morning club to reflect on the men's Champions League midweek matches. But from Alex and myself, it's goodbye.